Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaura Gopinath Shyam Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai. Gaura Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Mahatma Vishnu Pradaya. Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namani. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nirvasesa Sunyavani Kaskachyade Shacharani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavam Sha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Shajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ravita Sri Vishakam Vitam Sha Manjakapa Chupascha Kupasnivya Vachapati Chanam Pavanevya Vaishnavya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. October 5th, 2020 in Hillsborough, North Carolina. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10. Chapter 20, the description of the rainy season in autumn, text 38, and we'll also be reading from Light of the Bhagavata, text 35. Kadavari charastapam Avindan charad arkajam Yata daridra kripana Dumya vichitendriya. Don't move to the word for word yet. What words do you recognize from this verse? Kripana, which means miserly.
Daridra means poor.
Daridra means poor.
Tapa means tapas.
Tapasya, austerity or penance. We had a nice talk about that yesterday. And you can't see it because the cursor's there, but indriya is?
Senses.
Okay. All right, let's go to the word for word.
Make sure you talk into the mic. I've been told that it's a little low and you turn away from it.
Okay, yeah, I'm trying to, like, you have to, like, be right into this mic. Okay, Gadavari Charaha. Those who were moving in shallow water.
Those who were moving in shallow water.
As you also recognize Chara, we have Chara Chara, the moving and non-moving, so these are creatures who are moving. Tapam. Suffering. Interesting translation of tapam, which we'll get to in class. Avindam. Experience. Sharat Arkajam. Due to the sun in the autumn season.
Due to the sun in the autumn season.
Yata. As. Daridra.
Daridra.
A poor person. Kripana. Miserly. Kutumbi. Absorbed in family life. Avijita Indriya.
Avijita Indriya.
Who has not controlled the senses.
Who has not controlled the senses.
The BBT translation. Just as a miserly, poverty-stricken person, overly absorbed in family life, suffers because he cannot control his senses, the fish swimming in the shallow water had to suffer the heat of the autumn sun. PBT purport. Although, as described in the previous verse, unintelligent fish are not aware of the diminishing water, which represents what?
Life.
Life, which is going to end in?
Any second.
Any second, yes. They're going to die any second, so they're not aware of death. One may think these fish are still happy, according to the old proverb, quote, ignorance is bliss, unquote. But even the ignorant fish are scorched by the autumn sun. Similarly, although an attached family man may consider his ignorance of spiritual life blissful, he is constantly disturbed by the problems of family life, and indeed his uncontrolled senses lead him into a situation of unrelieved anguish. Okay, let's go to Light of the Bhagavad, text 35. When the small pools of water become too hot because of the scorching heat of the autumn sun, the poor small creatures with their many family members suffer terribly, as poor householders with too many family members suffer economic strains and yet go on begetting children because of uncontrolled senses. Srila Prabhupada's translation and Srila Prabhupada's purport here in Light of the Bhagavata. Human life is meant for controlling the senses, for uncontrolled senses are the cause of material bondage. But for fools, sense enjoyment is the pivot of life's activities. All men undergo hard, laborious duties all day and night and in all seasons of the year, only for the sake of sense pleasure with their mates. These foolish creatures have no information of other enjoyment. In a godless civilization especially, sense pleasure accepted in the name of culture and philosophy is all in all. Men who are addicted to this pleasure are called kripanas. When the kripanas have too many children, they suffer the scorching heat of family life, and then similar leaders advise them to undertake family planning. The idea of this family planning is that sense pleasure should not be curtailed, but birth control should be accomplished by artificial measures. Such methods of birth control are called bruna hatya, or killing the child in embryo. Such killing is a sinful act, and in the revealed scriptures, a specific hell is designated for those who commit such sins. Spiritual culture means pursuing a better engagement in life. When a man engages in such cultural life, the desire for mating automatically abates, and the sufferings of uncontrolled family life are mitigated without artificial means. The attention of a human being, therefore, should be drawn to the cultivation of the human spirit, for this will gradually protect him from all sorts of discomfiture and elevate him to a higher status of life for real and eternal enjoyment in personal contact with the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Doesn't that sound nice? And we're going to get the commentary. The commentary of Jiva Goswami and Sanatana Goswami here is practically identical, so we'll just read one of them. Although they do not know the water is evaporating, they still cannot be happy, though they do not have fear. Rather, they suffer greatly. The heat from the autumn sun is intense. A man without money is troubled to earn money, kripana, because he must support his wife and sons with plenty of money. He is also afflicted with greed or uncontrolled senses. Just as a fish suffers from heat, a man suffers the threefold miseries. So we might think, well, we just won't live in fear. We'll just forget about fear. We'll forget about death. We'll forget about difficulties. We'll just enjoy in the moment. Right? This is the other option. So yesterday's verse was, death is coming, and therefore we're always afraid, and this fear disturbs our life. Huh? And just as we talked about how yesterday also, how people like to just forget about death. They want to say, well, I'm not going to die. I'm just going to go on. So this verse particularly deals with that. Let's just live in the moment. Let's just enjoy the moment. So there's two classes of living beings who try to live in the moment and thus become happy. And the Bhagavad Gita talks about these two types as the
fool.
The fools and the
sages.
And the sages and the transcendentalists. So both persons live without fear. Live in the moment without fear and try to become happy. The fools and the transcendentalists. So the fools here are called daridra. They're very poor. They're poor in knowledge. They're not actually dealing with things. The idea, I don't know if they actually do it, but the idea of the ostrich with his head in the sand, or the rabbit that just closes their eyes when the fox is coming. You know, so this is, it's a kind of poverty where you're not even aware of your situation. They're so-called living in the moment, but they're not really aware of what's going on in the moment. They're living in the moment in a kind of illusion, therefore they're considered very poor. The transcendentalist who lives in the moment is very rich. The spirit soul actually has opulences like the Lord. One of the liberations we were studying yesterday, Nectar of Instruction, about, you know, Vaikuntha, Mathura, Vrindavan, Govardhan, Radhakund. And one of the opulences of the spiritual world, one of the liberations, is where the Lord shares his opulences equally with the living entities. Bless you. Which is quite a different situation from this world, where we want to keep our opulences for ourselves. We don't really want to share them with everybody else. But the living entity, the liberated living entity, is enjoying the opulences of the Lord. I was just hearing Prabhupada speak about this yesterday, how it's natural for the child to enjoy the wealth of the parents. Isn't it that it's just a natural thing? Nobody wonders at it. When you're living in your parents' home, unless your parents are, you know, cruel and abusive people, so you're enjoying all the opulences of your parents' home. You're enjoying your parents' wealth, you're enjoying the food with your parents, you're sitting at the same table, right? Whatever they have, they're sharing with you. I always like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati's commentary on the Shikshastaka, Anandam Buddhivardhanam, that although the jiva is finite, it's in touch with the infinite pleasure of the Lord. And Prabhupada talks about how the jiva in prema is enjoying through Krishna. Right? That when the jiva works for the pleasure of Krishna, which means uniting the Lord and his energy of pleasure, like we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. When the jiva does that, then the internal energy, the spiritual energy, Krishna Das Kaviraj says, nourishes the jiva. We're meant to enjoy the joy of God. In fact, that's why we exist. Srila Prabhupada was asked, why do we exist? He says, because the Lord wants to enjoy. Now, in the material world, a person has a family because, generally speaking, materialistic people, because they want to exploit the family members for their own enjoyment. A materialistic entity wants to have control over as many other entities and objects as possible to try to suck enjoyment out of them because they feel empty inside. We spoke about this in a class on Saturday, how they're looking for happiness. Prahlad Maharaj says, as soon as you look for happiness outside of yourself, then immediately your suffering begins. But Krishna is just the opposite. He's this unlimited, ever-flowing fountain of happiness. And he wants to share it. Just like you're at a wedding, you want to share your happiness with others, right? Isn't it? You're like, we don't want to just have a little wedding in the corner by ourselves. We want to share it with our friends, with our relatives. Right? Like if Chaitanya makes a cheesecake, I want to share it with everybody. Right? I can't possibly eat the whole thing myself. So I want to share it. So Krishna's like that. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said this. He said, I can't eat all the fruits myself. I want to distribute them. So this is the reason why we exist. This is the reason why anything exists. Prabhupada was asked, I think, Caracas, Venezuela, why is there anything? Prabhupada said, ananda, for happiness. So the transcendentalist is not dharidra. The transcendentalist is not poor. By connecting with the Lord, the transcendentalist is feeling this unlimited bliss of the Lord. Right? The Lord is up marama, up the kama, and so is the transcendentalist. The transcendentalist is feeling, I have all my desires fulfilled. This is how Dhruva Maharaj felt when he saw the Lord. He said, I wanted some broken pieces of glass, but now I'm completely filled up. I don't want anything. So the dharidra person is living in the moment like a rabbit, blocking out, trying to block out their fear, trying to block out reality, and therefore being impoverished. And the transcendentalist is living in the moment because they have a constant stream of abundance. And therefore they don't need to worry about death. They don't need to worry about difficulties. And this is very connected to Kripana. The fool is a miser. They say they're forgetting about fear. They say they're forgetting about death. They say they're living in the moment. But their miserly behavior reveals the fact that they're always worried about the future and the past. They have to hold on to everything themselves. They're not willing to share. They're not willing to be charitable. Krishna says, right, charity, he says, yajna, tapas, dana, should be done by everyone. But if you feel really poor, if you feel really lacking inside, it's hard to be charitable, isn't it? It's hard to give anything when you feel so poor. And so these materialistic people who are feeling poor and bereft, they also become miserly. They don't want to share anything with anyone. I had a really good question in the Bhakti Shastri yesterday. Actually, it related to more to Ishopanishad, the nectar of instruction. But the question was that if everyone has their quota, right, as stated in the Ishopanishad, and if Krishna says that he puts fallen yogis into rich families, then why shouldn't we just accept that Krishna wants some people to be rich and Krishna wants some people to be poor? And I said, yes, but if you're rich, what you're supposed to do is share. You know, if there's five kids in a family and you give one of them a plate of 15 cookies, you expect them to share the cookies with their siblings. And if they don't, you'll give the plate to another child the next time. And Prabhupada explains that our wealth in this life is related to how much charity we gave in the previous lives. You know, and the people now who are rich and very, very, very charitable, you know that they're going to be even richer in the next life. Prabhupada says you give away charity, you get back the same amount in your next life if you just give ordinary charity. We talked about this the other day. And according to the qualifications of the persons to whom you give charity, you get back, you know, double, triple, or he said you give to a pure Vaishnava, you get back unlimitedly. And we have a very interesting verse coming up on Wednesday from the Hawaii E-Sangha on charity. Fascinating. But anyway, so the person who feels poor becomes also very miserly, and this miserliness increases their poverty. Because the Lord, like a good parent, doesn't give a lot to people who don't share. And this is not just in regard to money. Srila Prabhupada told our god sister Yamuna, if you don't teach other people how to cook, you'll become envious. If we don't share our knowledge, whatever wealth we have, the wealth is not just cash. We can have wealth in knowledge, we can have wealth in renunciation. If we're very renounced, we should help other people to become renounced, help other people to be free. If we're expert in leadership, we should empower other people to be leaders. If we're expert in beauty, we should spread beauty to others. Whatever kind of wealth we have, if we're expert in strength, we should empower and strengthen others. So the devotee, because the devotee is feeling unlimitedly rich, like Kolavicha Sridhar, externally he was very, very poor, but he felt unlimitedly rich. How do we know that? Because when Lord Chaitanya said to him, I'll offer you all mystic powers, he said, what would I do with them? He said, I'll offer you a whole planet. Why would I want it? You can rule a universe. What for? I already have, he said, everything that I could want. Is there anything I could give you? Mahaprabhu asked. And he said, sure. Life after life, I want to sell little cups and plates and have you come as Nimai and argue with me over the price. Actually, I was just hearing this morning, Srila Prabhupada was saying that however, whatever relationship we want with Krishna, you know, if we want to be one of Krishna's cowherd boys, we want to be one of the gopis, Krishna will give us whatever relationship, that's not intellectual. It's not like you sit down intellectually and look at the books and say, well, I think it's not like that. But whatever comes from the desire of the heart and purification. But my point is that the devotee wants nothing. Why? Because they already have everything. And so they're generously giving to everyone. And here we see that the materialistic person, they're the slave of their senses. Even when the result of their sense gratification is nothing but trouble, they can't stop their senses. You know, Srila Prabhupada's talking about people in family life. We see this more in our world today, with people who don't take up family life but can't control their senses. And they're producing children with this person and children with that person and children with that. Right? This is a common thing in modern society. You know, I have five children by five different mothers or by five different fathers, and they can't take care of them. They can't take care of them, but they can't control their senses. So we would be very happy if people actually were married and took care of their five children instead of, you know, just producing a child here, producing a child there, producing a child there. They can't control their senses. They're just driven. Whereas the transcendentalists, they're the master of their senses. Why is that? Because the transcendentalist is experiencing a higher taste. Parmadrisvanivartate. When we gave our presentation, it was really funny to Caltech students on Saturday on material and spiritual happiness. So a lot of the students afterwards said, well, can't we still try for material happiness? Isn't that all right? I said, why? If you can have spiritual happiness, why would you want to try for something temporary that's based on misery and that gives you misery and that's filled with fear and exploitation? I said, it doesn't mean you can't have a house and a car and a family and, you know, a good job. But why not enjoy them in spiritual happiness? Why try to enjoy them materially? It's not that we can't function in the world. Ashur Prabhupada functioned in the world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur functioned in the world. But why not function in the world as a spiritualist? And a spiritualist doesn't have trouble controlling their senses because their happiness is within. They're not trying to get happiness from external things or from the body and mind. It doesn't mean anything to them. And the materialist who can't control their senses, the problem with sense enjoyment is, first of all, you need misery to enjoy. If you're not hungry, food doesn't taste good. We all have this experience. You've just eaten a big meal, I've just eaten a huge feast, and someone brings me Chaitanya's cheesecake, and I would say, no, thank you. Or one of little Krishna's gulabjamans, little Krishna Priya's gulabjamans. And I'd say, no, thank you. Why? Because without hunger, there's no pleasure. It actually is revolting, isn't it? When you're full, you're completely full, and you eat your samosa or your pizza or something, and it's just like, ugh. And we all know when we're really hungry, even ordinary food tastes good, isn't it? Even food we normally wouldn't eat, if we're really, really hungry, we're like, wow, this is delicious. If we're not tired, having to sleep is a punishment. I had a mild chicken pox when I was a kid, and my mother said, stay in your bed, and it was a punishment. As soon as she left the room, I got up. And as soon as I'd hear her, I'd jump back into bed. I was 4 years old. I remember it quite clearly. But when we're tired, sleeping is a great pleasure. And it's the same with everything. If there's no desire, but the desire is a suffering, isn't it? Yes? If there's no desire, then the pleasure has no pleasure. So in order to enjoy sense pleasure, you have to first suffer. What crazy deal is that? Then after the sense pleasure you suffer, Prabhupada talks about here, unwanted children that are then killed through abortion. How much suffering is that? You know, invading the body and you have to live the rest of your life. You know, I've murdered my own son, I've murdered my own daughter. You know, or if you don't murder the kids, then you have to take care of kids you don't like, or you have to give them away to someone else and worry about it. I never wanted to have you anyway. I know kids who grew up like that, where the parents would say that we never really wanted to have you. Wow, you know, what a horrible life. You know, you give the kids away. I mean, even Kunti, who gave her son away, it was burning for the whole life. So there's misery after enjoyment. You eat too much, you eat the wrong food, and then you're like, ugh. So you have to suffer before you enjoy, and you have to suffer after you enjoy. It's a suffering sandwich. You know, suffering before, suffering after, and how much pleasure do you get in the middle? I mean, even if you want to talk about eating, you have to suffer to grow the food, or you have to suffer to earn the money to buy the food, and you have to cook, and you have to maintain a house to cook in, and then after you finish, you have to clean up. Right? If you've ever cooked a meal for like hundreds of people, and everybody finishes in 20 minutes, right? And you're spending hours or days preparing, and then afterwards you have to do the cleanup. I mean, we do it for Krishna, it's blissful. But materially, it's this suffering sandwich. And so the materialist is always trying to get the happiness without the suffering. They're like the kid who tries to cut the crust off their bread. Or when my oldest son was little, he would only eat the top of the cupcake. Right? We lived in the New York temple, and the devotees had a bakery. And there weren't that many kids in the temple. And there weren't that many boy children, and there was an anti-girl mentality at the time, Hare Krishna. Anyway, so the brahmacharis were regularly giving my son cupcakes. Like, every time I turned around, they were giving him cupcakes. I mean, it was interesting when Srila Prabhupada came to visit in 1976. I couldn't get up to Prabhupada to get a cookie, because the sannyasis formed a saffron wall around Srila Prabhupada, and I literally could not get up there. But I could send my kid, you know, and we dressed him up in a little saffron dhoti, Hare Krishna fanatics. Anyway, so he would go there, and the sannyasis would pick him up and hold him in front of Srila Prabhupada. I remember one time he got 10 cookies in one day. You know, anyway, so they were, the devotees were always giving our son sweets. So they would always give him cupcakes, and then he would just eat the top and leave the bottom, right? And this is what materialistic people try to do. Let me eat the icing without the bottom part. You know, let me have the sex life without the responsibility of marriage, without the responsibility of children. Let me earn money without paying my taxes. You know, this is the mood of the materialistic people. Let me get the pleasure without the suffering. Does that work? There's this thing called the law of karma. And it doesn't work. And if you try to get the enjoyment without the suffering, you pay more later. It's like if you go in a shop, and instead of paying the $20 for the item, you steal the item. So let's say you had to work an hour to earn the $20, or even 2 hours. But if you steal the item, you get arrested, you get taken to the police station, so you're down there for 6 hours, and maybe you get thrown in jail, and you're there overnight, and then you get something on your record. And so you've paid so much more than you would if you paid for the item, even with parking. You know, instead of sticking the 25 cents in the parking meter, then you have to pay a $100 fine. Maybe you have to drive to the courthouse. So the time it would have taken you to find a different parking spot, or the time it would have taken you to earn the 25 cents, is much less than what you have to pay later if you do it in public. So it doesn't work. Now, the transcendentalists, on the other hand, they see both the enjoyment that they get in this world and the suffering they get in this world as prasada, as Krishna's mercy. They actually don't distinguish. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that he sees the burdens that he has in service as great pleasure. We can all understand this a little bit. If I love somebody, then taking trouble for the person I love is a pleasure. If I'm cooking a feast for 200 people and I love those people, then the shopping and the preparation and the cooking and the cleaning up is just as much pleasure as the eating. But we see this in Krishna consciousness, isn't it? Sometimes we work so hard for a festival, we never get to enjoy the festival, and it doesn't matter. When I was running a gurukul, it was often like that. I would spend the whole festival getting the kids ready for the drama. The entire festival, and then having them put on the drama, and then helping them get out of costume and makeup after the drama. And then, like here, I used to do the serve out on Janmashtami. So I never got to enjoy the festival. You know, I never got to go to anybody else's, to any of the bhajans. I never got to go to any of the performances. But I enjoyed it. It didn't make any difference. The suffering and the enjoyment were equal. You couldn't even distinguish, and this is what's described in Bhagavad Gita 4.24. The sacrifice, the priest, the offering, everything merges into transcendence. This distinction becomes lost. Whereas the materialists are absorbed in how can I get the pleasure and not have to pay for it? How can I steal? And then we have this wonderful word, tapa. So tapa can mean suffering, it can mean fire, it can mean austerity, it can mean penance. Srila Prabhupada seems to use it synonymously with austerity and penance most of the time. So for the materialistic person, you know what happens when you try to enjoy things by stealing? You don't even get enjoyment from the enjoyment. So for the transcendentalist, everything merges into transcendence. For the materialist, everything becomes tapasya. Even the enjoyment becomes tapasya. Everything becomes suffering. Because you might try to forget that your little pond's drying up, but you can't really forget it. That there's this ever-present underlying anxiety and fear. So the Bhagavatam says these fools appear to be happy, but they're not really happy. They're not experiencing anything we can actually call happiness. Their happiness is at the level of an animal who doesn't understand or think about the values of life, but is always looking around. Who's going to take my food? Who's going to eat me? The animal constantly, even the big predators. I was just reading yesterday about the fights between giant squids and sperm whales.
I read about them.
Really? You also read about that. They're two of the biggest predators, the apex predators, the sperm whales and the giant squids. And they're afraid of each other. It's like that. You can be the apex predator. You know, the polar bears, they're afraid of humans. And humans are afraid of polar bears. Right? So there's always this tapasya going on. No one can ever have full enjoyment. For the devotees, they also have a tapasya. Actually, it's really interesting that Lord Vishnu tells Lord Brahma that he does everything through tapasya. He creates through tapasya. We're just reading in the seventh canto how the demigods are telling Lord Vasudeva, you create everything through tapasya. Tapasya, in one sense, means you're going through some trouble for someone you love. Isn't that what love means? If I'm just your fair weather friend, if I never go through any trouble for you, how do I love you? Therefore, the marriage vows, they say, right? Sickness and health. Right? Whether rich or poor. Well, I'm going to stay with you as long as we're rich and healthy and everything's going great. That's not love. So Krishna's always giving to the living entity. The whole material world is a giving to the living entities who've turned against him. And the tapasya of the devotee is a kind of penance. I've turned away from you, dear Lord, and I want to show you that I'm sorry. I want to make the broken relationship whole. As Maharaj was talking about the other day, restorative justice. I want to restore the relationship with you, O Lord. And I'm willing to go through some trouble to do so. I'm willing to show you that I'm serious. I'm willing to chant my 16 rounds when I feel like it and when I don't feel like it. When I have a lot of time and when I'm busy to the max and I have no idea how I'm going to fit it into my day. I'm going to read Prabhupada's books. I'm going to study Prabhupada's books when I feel like it, when I don't feel like it. When I have lots of time on a retreat and when I'm so busy I don't know how I'm going to fit it into my day. I'm going to work at thinking of you, Krishna, when it's easy, when it's hard. The demigods were saying to Lord Nisingadev, we couldn't think about you with Hiranyakashipu here. Now that he's dead, we can think about you. But the devotees are, I'm going to think about you in heaven and hell. I'm going to remember you if Maharaj Yudhisthira is running the country, and I'm going to remember you if Hiranyakashipu is running the country. And that's the tapasya of the devotees. So the devotees can actually be in the moment without fear. Because the devotees are rich and charitable They have happiness from within, and therefore they can control their senses. Both their happiness and distress is all happiness, and their tapasya is a voluntary giving of love. Yes, Maharaj.
I think I found some happiness in this material world.
Okay.
It doesn't entail any suffering.
That's because you're a devotee.
No.
You found happiness,
no,
it doesn't...
This is a trick question.
Oh, it's a trick question.
Not about me. It's not about me.
Okay.
It doesn't involve any suffering. It's vicarious enjoyment. So I watch films about people enjoying it, and then I'm not having to, suffer, have children or anything like that. I just watch the films, and, there's drama, there's all sorts of stuff. I have a subscription to Netflix, and all day long I'm watching films.
Okay, so Maharaj is saying that a person will say, well, I have a subscription to Netflix, I watch films all day of other people enjoying, and I don't have to suffer. How do you pay for Netflix?
My mother pays for it.
Your mother pays for it. Okay, so your mother just takes care of you. And so you're sitting all day watching Netflix?
And I'm enjoying it.
What's happening to your bodily health from sitting all day? You think you're going to have to pay for
that? I also have a treadmill that I use.
Oh, I see. And how do you pay for the treadmill?
My mother paid for it.
My mother paid for it. I see. Well, it seems like that you have some situation that you earned from your past karma, but if you don't take care of that, if you don't use that situation for your spiritual benefit and the benefit of others, then you're going to have to pay for it later.
The answer actually is that all enjoyment is illusory, because you're identifying with.
Well, that's true. Even if you're enjoying it yourself, it's all illusory.
Yeah, it's not illusory.
It's not touching the real self.
No one else I know about the squid, the whale.
Huh?
The squids and the whales.
Yeah.
You said that.
Someone else.